Good morning, everyone. John Huckenberry here, joined all week by Amy Holmes. And in Kabul, Afghanistan, a flashback to the 90s. We're checking in on what I think it's fair to say is Obama's war in Afghanistan. But 9 rockets fired by the Taliban this morning into the Afghan capital of Kabul, possibly escalating the situation there. One of the rockets landed in the diplomatic district close to the U.S. and other Western embassies and the headquarters of NATO. Joining us now, once again, David Loyne, BBC foreign correspondent, author of the book In Afghanistan, just out here in the United States. But he's in Kabul, Afghanistan this morning. David, I spent a bunch of time in Kabul in the 1990s, and the signs of air raids and rocket attacks were on virtually every building in the city. I'm wondering if people in Kabul this morning are feeling as though it's a bit of a flashback to the 90s.
Well, John, that's exactly the fear. I mean, you remember what it was like then before. In fact, before the Taliban came in the mid-90s, when there were these indiscriminate rocket attacks, killed tens of thousands of people, destroyed the southern suburbs of the city in that civil war before the Taliban emerged in the mid-90s. And that's exactly the fear of Kabul residents that one of them said to me, could it all be starting all over again? I must say, when I first was woken up by one of the rockets this morning, they were very much one after the other in quite an intense period, around about 5 minutes. I thought it was a distant boom, and I thought it was probably Taliban being bombed somewhere away from the city. And to wake up later and see the damage in a building not very far away from where I was sleeping, and to hear that actually these had been rockets was a real surprise, because it's the first time since 2001, apart from some isolated mortar attacks, that the Taliban have been able to carry out an attack of this sort.
And we should remind people that during the entire 90s, there was no civil authority in Afghanistan. In fact, ambulances had to cross an artillery line in Kabul to even get to the hospital, because the city was divided and controlled by various factions. So the Taliban know exactly what they're doing here, trying to signal that they're willing to actually suspend all civil authority as a front against the NATO coalition.
Yes, and I think it does mark a real change from the Taliban's point of view, and a certain amount of cynicism that they don't mind that there might be civilian casualties. I mean, most of these rockets fell, in fact, in open areas. Only 2 civilians were injured in them. One of the rockets failed to explode at all. But if they had killed people, then that would have been a real move for the Taliban, who've always said that they wanted to protect civilians and not to damage the population, not to lose popular support. But I think it shows that they want to disrupt the elections, and they don't mind quite how it is that they do it.
David, this is Amy Holmes here. We understand that
some
British parliamentarians are critical of the strategy in Afghanistan. Do these attacks prove them right?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's hard to sort of take a whole political stance just from one series of rocket attacks. But, you know, again, today there was a roadside bomb that exploded on against a convoy of a provincial governor on his way into Kabul. There have been attempts on the lives of several election candidates and campaign coordinators, and it shows how difficult it is to run open democracy at a time of conflict. And I think what House of Commons Foreign Affairs Committee report at the weekend, which was very strongly critical of the British government, was trying to say was that the international community, Britain in particular, are trying to do too much. You can't fight a war at the same time as fighting narcotics, at the same time as trying to build democracy. You need to focus a bit on exactly what it is that you can achieve rather than spreading everything all around.
Well, David Loyne, they particularly were talking about actually opening some sort of dialogue with the Taliban. Let's review the bidding a little bit. We've got 9 rockets this morning. We've got serious casualties, the worst casualty count during the month of July in the entire war. We've got elections on August 20th, and on the New York Times front page this morning, people say they don't believe the elections are going to take place. The Taliban was saying that Afghanis should boycott these elections. These rockets seem like a deliberate attempt to really completely disrupt anything that's going to take place between now and August 20th.
I think that's very much the intention. I'm not sure I entirely agree with that New York Times report. I mean, there was a lot of suspicion as to whether elections could take place here in 2005, and they did. The test that Richard Holbrooke, now the US envoy for the whole region, has put on is that the election process should be credible and legitimate. The international community realize that it's rough and ready. It won't be a perfect democracy. It won't be a perfect test of the electorate in the way that some Western countries might be governed, might run their elections. But even though it's rough and ready, I think there is a hope and expectation that some form of polling will take place. If it does, it'll be the first time in Afghan history that there's been as it were, the second presidential election in a row. You've had one president elected and then another, whether it's Hamid Karzai or not. But I think there is certainly a real concern on the part of the international community that despite the large number of foreign forces in the country, they still haven't got a grip of the security. And I just mention some of the themes that I wrote about in my book is just how hard it is once you take a country, once you take Afghanistan, to hold it and to impose your will, because it's such a complex country. And I think the international community are only just beginning to realize quite how complicated it is.
Which brings me to my next question. What about the efforts then to reach out to, you know, quote unquote, moderate Taliban? Does all of this violence complicate that effort?
Well, I think the history of counterinsurgency negotiations, and certainly the British government saw this in Northern Ireland, is that they can go on at the same time as there is real bloodshed and real conflict. The line is on these negotiations, and I think there's been a lot written in the last few days trying to say the UN takes one view about negotiations, the US takes another view, the UK takes another view, and the House of Commons MPs committee take another view. I think they're all nuances, really, on what is now an accepted view of the international community that there should be negotiations with those Taliban who want to negotiate. And as one diplomat put it to me this week, if you're Hillary Clinton's definition was about irreconcilable. She said, "I won't talk to those who are irreconcilable." Well, a diplomat said to me this week, "It's up to them to define who's irreconcilable." You know, there is now a will to talk to senior Taliban if they'll come across and potentially talk to the international community.
Right.
But at the same time, the conflict on both sides is going on.
Well, it would appear that the Taliban have the initiative with 9 rockets landing in Kabul this morning, which at the very least complicates the surge and the offensive going on in Helmand province on a very other part of the country. David Loring, thanks so much for joining us. David Loin, BBC foreign correspondent, author of the book In Afghanistan, just out in the U.S.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.